You guys there?
I'm here.
I'll edit it back in. All right. Yeah, so then Rob sent me this text of, like, I guess every half hour from L.A. to Dallas, there's another flight there, and there was one canceled. I didn't think much of it, and he showed me, like, this scroll of, like, 15 or 20 flights with one red canceled, and Rob goes, guess which one my father was scheduled to go on, and I was like, brother! It's like, Lord in heaven, what else could he throw at us?
So, yeah, it was pretty good.
So, anyways, we got that back, got everything all set up. So the legendary minus S will play a little bit more specific in this story later on, but essentially you guys ran off, what, 870 of them? Is that the count, or did you do 1,000, or what's the deal?
There were exactly 860 of them.
Okay.
That were ran. So we've got 860 that are a little bit of an error, but not so bad.
And because this is also going to play in later, of the test coins, with the ones with the wooden background, we did there was like two different versions of that. There was kind of like the really crappy version, and there's the one that they kind of put a little bit more effort on. How many of those actually were produced and actually got sent out? Like, what was the order there? I know I have four of them. I got the first four, but how many of those were produced?
We ran 120 of those total.
Okay. So there's essentially 60 and 60. Or did they do, like, majority one or the other? Do you know?
They did 120. They did 100 of them in their standard format. They did 20 of them what they call a proof format. And then okay. They did 16 of them in a proof, and then four in, like, a really horrible method that I don't even want to try to think about.
Okay. And this is going to play in later because there's a couple odd rare coins out there. So finally, Sunday, I fly in, and I'm all like packed to the gills. Like, I never pack with so much. Usually I like carry like a little backpack and I'm good for like a week, but because we're going to the Silver Summit and I'm going to Texas, you know, where it's going to be warm and thing, I got this whole big bag and everything. So I go meet Rob and Gus, and this is what essentially starts the beef, bullets, beer, and bullion week. So we get down there. Did we go directly to the Mint, or did we go out for food, or what was the story?
Yeah, we went straight to the Mint. Yeah. So you could actually see for yourself, yeah. And confirm the reality of a press and somebody sitting there minting medallions and a safe full of blanks that were secured.
Yep.
to keep up with the production. So I wanted you to be able to see with your own eyes as quickly as you possibly could.
Yeah, considering I'm probably one of the largest buyers of these things, and I haven't seen my metal in such a long time. But essentially I took advantage of that whole process where you can send in these 100-ounce bars and other coins. We actually had people send in eagles and maple leaves and all sorts of stuff to secure these new coins, so it was kind of cool to see that. We got to see the coins. I actually pressed out probably 100 of them. And got to see how the operation works. It's a real cool system. I think I have video and stuff. I'll probably get that up later. And certainly a lot of pictures. Can you tell people about Paz? Because I think he's probably, besides you two fine fellows, one of the most interesting guys you have down there. And I think that he's a real credit to your business. And how'd you come to find him?
Paz and I met in 2008 when we were somewhat actively involved with the Ron Paul campaign here in Dallas. And he's a wealth of information. I mean, the guy is a retired Dallas Cowboy offensive lineman, played 82 to 87 under Landry here in Dallas. And I think he got bit by a radioactive spider at the same time he was trying to make a tackle and got hit in the head or something, because he's got a photographic memory. I mean,
yeah,
he's absolutely brilliant.
Super sharp. Like, and he's huge. Like, he's one of these guys, like, you meet and you're like, God damn, he's big. And he's an old dude, too, but he's still, like, jacked.
He'll tell people that he's 5'21", which I think translates to 6'9". But, he's 300 and something pounds. He's a big guy, and he's, you know, he's just, when he retired from the NFL, he went on and did a whole bunch of different business, different types of business, got involved with a bunch of different things. But one of them was he ran a sawmill. Mm-hmm. And in the sawmill, business. You know, every little teeny tiny measurement counts. I mean, you can be off on your sawmill blade by 0.001 of an inch, and that'll account for almost $500,000 a month of wasted wood. And so precision is really what matters inside of that type of industry. You know, material handling, making sure that it's efficient to get from one side of the process all the way to the other side. And so that's really the background that Paz brought with him when I called him one day early this year and said, "Hey, Paz, you think you could start a mint?" And he says, "Yeah, I think I could do that." And so sure enough, here we are 7-8 months later with a lot of equipment, a lot of product now starting to come out thanks to you and this this new hydraulic press. But we've got a lot to look forward to here as well as we continue to work towards becoming a full-service facility.
Yeah, so the press that you got is brand new. It's like super high speed. It's going to have automation stuff. But Paz was like running me through this stuff. And I really want to just do a call with him one day, maybe talk about, because he talked to me for about an hour about Tesla Energy, and I actually feel like I have a better understanding of something that you know, might have been a little bit above my pay grade. But he's a very, very sharp man. He's actually going to be in the process of making the mint more automated. You guys actually bought three presses from the Kansas City Mint. Is that what it was?
We got three Bliss 6K225 high-speed knuckle joint presses out of the Denver Mint. And they were set up over there to make pennies four up. And that's really a great thing for us because we're going to keep a lot of the same tooling that's in those machines and set them up to do 10th-ounce silver,
yep,
which from what I understand is becoming a very hot product and commodity out there since the old junk silver bags are becoming very, very expensive and hard to find now.
Yeah, all that constitutional silver, been hearing a little bit here and there that it's getting much more difficult to find as we've been bringing a little bit more attention to the market. I mean, I think I've been talking about constitutional silver for, I don't know, probably about a year now. And the thing that I love about what we're going to be able to offer is these 10,000 coins. The majority of the problem that's always happened with fractional coins are that the premiums on them are just ridiculous. I know
right.
Amex has got them, and it's like, you know, I don't want to, maybe it's like a $2 per 10,000 coin, because the way that they do it is one at a time.
Yeah.
And it takes just as much time and effort and premium to make a 10,000 as it does an ounce. And that's why they don't sell. Well, Rob's got this system with these penny knuckle presses, and a penny is about the exact same size as a 10,000 silver round, whereas a dime
right.
is, you know, like, was a 0.072.
Yeah, a little smaller.
Smaller of an ounce. So Rob's actually, once these presses get up and running, and they're not ready, but I'm confident after meeting Paz, he's going to get this thing going, that they're going to be able to run off four at a time. So that's four times what the other guys can do. Plus, because it's a knuckle joint press, it runs at what, 800 clicks per minute or 400? What's the rotation per minute that it can pump out?
It's 200 strokes per minute times four medallions per stroke. So we'll be able to produce 800 of those per minute, and we've got three of them over here. So I think it's a game changer for 10,000 silver. I think that you'll start seeing a lot more fractional pop up in the marketplace because of our configuration here. And it was really just mostly luck. We bought these three presses. Mm-hmm. We bought them. We checked them out before we bought them, but they showed up and they were mostly sight unseen. And we looked at the tooling that was already in the presses. I mean, completely intact tooling, straight out of the Denver Mint.
Built like brick shit houses. Like, Paz was telling me this one frame that it was on is like 2 feet by like 14 feet. Like, it was just pure steel, and they actually had to cut in the middle of it. It's like, I mean, these things are, they don't build them like they used to.
No, they don't. And they're about 20,000 pounds each. We traded 25 ounces of gold for 60,000 pounds of steel. So
yeah,
I think we
got a
pretty good deal.
That's a good,
pretty good conversion
gold
rate.
To steel ratio.
right. but no, we looked at the tooling and we said, well, we could tear all these tools out, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of tools it would cost to replace this stuff. And we said we can tear it all out and replace it with one ounce tooling, or we can keep it in there and set up ourselves up to do fractional 10,000 silver.
So just so people get what's going on, like, we're like these 1 ounce coins are really cool, and we're going to keep doing them, but we really think that the majority of the volume and the impact that we're going to have in the physical silver market is going to come from the 10th ounce coins. And I've already designed a new 10th ounce coin that everybody I showed at Silver Summit said it looks awesome. And it's essentially playing on that whole idea of the silver denarius, how that was the day's pay for each soldier that worked in the emperor's army. So we got a really cool picture of a Roman centurion on the front, and then next to it says Agri Respides, which Gus will tell you means silver shield in Greek, which has some historical significance, because I come to find out that Alexander the Great had a silver shield legion of 10,000 of his best and oldest warriors, and they actually had Macedonian shields. And if anybody saw me from way back in the day, I didn't realize that the shield that I was using to represent me as Silver Shield was actually a silver shield from Alexander the Great. And then on the back of that, we put Molon Lob, which is the original defiant, come and take them. So it's going to be a really cool thing. But the math or the economics of this press, once it gets going, and I think we have to wait until January, because this is not something we can turn around anytime soon. But the math is, Rob can do essentially 6 1-ounce coins in this current press setup. He could probably double that with a little bit more automation. But with, that might get you, eight or, a handful of silver ounces. Whereas if we can do 800 10th ounce coins per minute, that's 800 10th ounce, which is almost 80 ounces of silver that you can produce. And I gotta imagine the premiums are going to be probably the lowest, if not the best. We may be competing directly with Constitutional Silver, which is silver that was minted, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
I think it's actually going to be less expensive. I've bought some of that for a colleague recently, and I was paying, I think it was $1 per ounce over spot for fractional circulated silver rounds from, the early 60s. So our target price wholesale, I won't get into that yet, but yeah. I will say that it is going to be competitive out there. And we want to make it so that people can buy – when you're buying silver retail, we want to make it so that you can buy 10th-ounce silver retail per ounce – for the same price, for about the same price that you would pay for a 1 ounce silver round.
Yeah,
that's the goal. And again, the focus and the reason for that is to make it so that it's a lot easier to trade.
Yeah.
People want that constitutional silver because it's small fractional amounts that are easy to barter with, and that's the perspective we've had from day one.
Yeah, and I mean, if you get the logic, like if given the choice between 10 1 ounce 1/10 silver coin or 1 1-ounce, I mean, besides the more art you can put on the bigger ones and stuff like that. I mean, it's such a compelling value to have more divisible, lower premium, brand new bullion. So I'm excited. I know that you have to fly out to India to get burnisher or some smelter thing. And
yeah, the saga continues. I got to fly out later this week and receive properly our continuous caster and our rolling mill and our annealing oven and all that stuff. So that's coming from a manufacturer also brand new, and got to make sure it gets here okay.
Yeah. So, I got to tour the site. It's, it's nothing fancy. I mean, it's not like walking into Fort Knox, but it's definitely cool to actually see real men doing real things. Here I have been, sitting on the front of a computer for 2 years, making videos and stuff. And here's, casting and stamping and, moving around a lot of precious metal. Everybody's got guns down there, which I thought was really cool. I hesitate to bring my gun out in my house because my wife and, these guys are all, going out for smokes. They got their pistols in their pockets, and I'm like, wow, this is really, I can get used to this. It's, it's sort of like freedom. So we went for burritos and stuff like that, called it a night pretty early, and then the next day we had a ton of fun. And where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the pickup truck or what else?
What day was that? Was that Monday or Tuesday? Yeah, we did that to, I don't remember.
Go pick up that bullion.
It's thinking back to what happened last week, it's like trying to think of what happened a year ago. It's been such an amazing
That's why I
week.
Wanted to get this on, because I think there's a lot of great stories. But one of the things that we had to do was actually go pick up, how much was it?
We picked up 40,000 ounces of silver shot.
Can you explain what the shot is?
Shot's also known as casting grain. It's little fine BBs of 0.999 fine silver that are broken down with greater surface area so that they're easier to melt. So you can buy silver in 1,000-ounce bars, or you can buy silver in casting grain, which is the easiest form to get started with melting.
Yeah, because the amount of energy it would take to melt a 1,000-ounce bar, there's not that much surface area, so the heat can only affect so much. Whereas the shot would almost like instantly melt,
yep.
If given the right thing. So, all right, so we go to this place, and here we are thinking we're pretty badass. Everybody's rolling up with they got their Glocks, and we're like wannabe homie gangsters. Roll up this silver dually that Rob got. Pull up to the place, and we go in there, and they got this like. Security cameras and laminated glass that's like a foot thick, and all these private rooms and stuff. Guy walks out, he's got an AR with a sidearm, and we're like, shit, man, we're outgunned here. So we went in there. Rob had already wired the money. I think it was almost $1.5 million of material that we ended up picking up. And Gus is like, can I take a picture? The guy with the AR, and he's like, no. So, Gus, do you want to give your perspective since you haven't really talked at all?
Well, yeah, I think there were a few lines that struck out. One was, I think someone looked over at, myself or Rob or maybe you, and I think we said, God, we need better security. because those guys were just, it was impressive. Cages everywhere. Yeah, ARs everywhere, cages everywhere. It was straight up a sight to see. It was impressive stuff. And I personally didn't know they were going to wheel out 4 oil barrels either. The silver would be kept in, which I thought was pretty cool as well.
Yeah. So they ended up clearing whatever. We had to pull the truck around to the other side. So now we're kind of like nervous because like it really was set up for like a movie. Like all we need is like some dudes rolling in and. We got the silver in the truck, and we got is pistols and stuff. I'm sure next time you bring the ARs that you guys got in the office. But, so then they open up the gate, and was it me, or is it like 20 guys come rolling out with this, with the barrels? It was a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I think it was a few warehouse guys, a few security. A few customer service order guys, a few security guys, and I call me crazy. I think even like the custodian place was armed. I mean, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And just for the record, I'm a Sig Sauer guy, not a Glock guy, Chris.
Oh, okay.
But semantics. But yeah, the place was awesome, and the barrels were in. We'll get to that in a second, but the barrels were. Enormous and heavy, and just it was awesome.
So each one of them's got like 10,000 ounces. I don't know what that works out to, but it's like 800 pounds per barrel. And the barrels weren't like huge oil barrels; they were kind of like a little bit smaller, maybe a diameter of like 2 feet. But they were certainly heavy. So they put it on the pallet. They put it on the back of the dually, and I go to Rob. I'm like, Rob, should we like secure this like with ropes and like things? And he's like, No. As long as it's over the center of the mast,
well, that's not really the truth, man. It wasn't that I didn't want to secure it. It's that I wanted the barrels.
I know you did, but
I evaluate my life on a constant basis, and at that moment, I said to myself, I don't have any barrels like that. I'd like to have those barrels.
Yeah.
And so I didn't see any convenient way for us to secure the property and keep the barrels at the same time. So, and so obviously security took a back seat to barrels.
Okay. All right. So continuing on. So we ended up securing the silver. And then so we're driving on the highway. And I go to Rob. I go, you know what, dude? I don't think you should go on the highway because this isn't really secured. He's like, well, my father's going to be driving it all the way up north. If we're going to find out this doesn't work, let's find out now. So I'm like, all right, somehow his logic always makes sense. So we get off the highway. That was cool. And we got off the exit ramp. I forget what happened, but all of a sudden I heard, like, you stepped on the dually, and I heard, and then all of a sudden there's, like, 5 horns behind us. They're like, We're like, oh God, no, this can't be good. So, Gus, do you want to see what we saw when we got out?
Well, I think we forgot at this time too, Chris. You're basically bleeding out too from the hand.
Oh yeah. So yeah, that was the other thing. We're like, when we got the barrels, I'm like, don't you think we should like open the barrels to see if that's actually silver shot there? So we're like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good idea. So I open up one, and like they're metal things, and of course I have my girly blogger hands that immediately cut and bleed like crazy. So I slice my finger open, and there's like blood all over the place. I think Gus did one of his. Oh, I was gonna puke, but
yeah. We lost Chris. Yeah. We lost Chris. They're never gonna forgive us. Chris is dying. We lost him. Yeah, it was. I freaked out. I was trying to try to patch it up. I was ready to go Rambo and stitch you up. I was like, oh my God, what's happening?
I think you offered to suck my finger. I think that's what you
said. That's yes, yes. But if I wanted to buy you, I wanted to buy you champagne first.
Okay.
Yes. No,
yeah,
it was.
So
I
end up applying self-medication by me sucking my finger until it stopped bleeding. And then, of course, I had to Google tetanus and understand what tetanus was, and it's not just rusty cans that do it. It actually has to have dirt on it, and that's where the thing lives. So hopefully if I have any jaw spasms in the next 2 weeks, I can blame the guys down at AOCS for having tetanus. So anyways, we're at the thing. We hear the horns blaring. Everybody's like, meep, meep, meep. So I'm like, oh my God, I hope the bags didn't like burst open and like laying all over the ground. We got to like try to sweep up Silver Shot in the middle of the highway. So Gus, go ahead. Tell them what you saw.
Yeah, we, at that point, I was just flying around the car. Like, my God, what do we do? What do we do? Because again, due to what was going on and the, every car within a 2-block radius honking at us. So I think a few of the theories were, let's just go for it. We're only 2 blocks away. Yeah. Let's pull over. Let's do this. We pull over, and lo and behold, the back of the truck was just couldn't handle the force. It almost took out the rear of the, yeah, it almost took the whole thing out. The thing was the door was detached from the truck, so it could have been a lot worse.
And there was no
than what
way
was.
For us to like pick up these barrels and slide it forward, so we actually had to empty all the barrels of like satchels of what are the 500 ounces a piece these bags. So like if you get a junk silver bag, it's about the same size, a little bit more compact, and it feels like a sandbag because it's all silver shot. So we ended up in the middle of the public, just throwing these bags into the center of the thing and throwing the barrels over and jimmying the gate closed. And Rob's got to like drive like Granny Smith going all the way back to his last two blocks. So
well, let me just add two things to this as well. Number one is that usually we're a whole lot more responsible when it comes to dealing with, precious metals and stuff like that. We kind of suspended all of that for the sake of the adventure. And the second thing is, luckily, the barrels got back to the mint in good condition.
Yeah. No, everything was fine. And then we immediately had to put your father back out on the road, and he had – where was he originally sent to? Like what state?
He was sent to Salt Lake, Utah.
Okay, so that's like a 1,000-mile drive or something. So your poor father just drove in from like Providence the week before. We flew him out to L.A. Now we're sending him up to Utah to go bring all this stuff up. And it's a hike, and he's got to go there. We sent him up there with another guy and some weapons and stuff. So again, it's like real like yeehaw. Stuff, but this is what you got to do. I mean, it's in order to do this, there's really no quick and efficient way of doing it. So there's certain risks you take on, but if you got the kind of guys that we got, where you're doing the best that you can. So this is only you guys normally don't ever move that much metal anyway, so it's usually much smaller amounts and stuff like that, but whatever.
Well, next time, and that's what I suggest everyone think about, next time you have a 1 ounce silver piece in your hand, it's probably, unless it was made by, some crony capitalist mint, there's probably a story behind it.
Yeah.
There's just a lot to the process. I mean, which we've talked about on the call so far, everything from the equipment to the automation, to the silver shot, to the blanks,
And the different specialities, and you know, I that's one of the things I want everybody to take away. I mean, this is much more difficult than I thought getting into it. You know, here I was like, oh, I'll come up with an idea and this, and they'll just get it done. And having seen it from start to finish with the art and, you know, the actual process and the handling and then the money involved and the slim margins and all that other stuff, it's really impressive. But I think that going forward that this is actually going to be something that not only will change the consciousness because there's something physical out there, and I'm going to tell a couple stories about what we saw at the Silver Summit, you know, will provide, I think, a financial backbone, especially to our Silver Shield group, to actually start doing something, you know, soon after this dollar paradigm fades. I'm trying to think, like, the next day, it was really production day. I spent all day in the office. I came up with like 7 other things. I started collaborating with the 2 artists that we have. It looks like the Trivium coin is pretty much a go. I guess we got to just get it to the engraver and get die blanks, and that should be coming out soon. I think we also decided that November 6th is going to be the last day for Silver Bullet, Silver Shield, and Debt and Death They Trust medallion, and I chose that date because I think that's going to be about the date that when we actually caught up to all the sales that we have, and actually be at you know, all caught up so that we can actually start doing another one, not have a pre-sale and be ready. And I wanted to tie it into this whole vote for silver theme about how stupid it is to vote for Romney or Obama, and that there's no effective change that's going to happen there, and that we should be voting for silver and actually you know, be that silver bullet and the silver shield. So yeah, mark it on your calendar. November 6th will be the last day that we take orders. Anybody listening to this, you know, is obviously a Silver Bull or Silver Shield member, and you guys could still have the discount. And I got to imagine we'll be close to 60,000 ounces sold. I think it would be really cool if we can get to whatever 2 metric tons is. I don't know if it's like 62,000 or whatever, but I think that would be really sweet. But we'll see. It doesn't really matter at this point because the next ones are coming. So yeah, the next day. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I believe you also, speaking of your members, I think you also had a few members come in to see.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, all right. So yeah, then the next day after all that stuff was done, we actually had, I don't know, 4 or 5 people come into the Dallas area. We actually, I sat with him for like an hour. It was funny. Some guy was like, yeah, I only found you like a week ago, but he goes, man, you've rocked my world. He's like, I spent all day watching your videos, and when I knew I was going to see, I had to watch all of them. So, he came down. Yeah, there's like 4 or 5 people, very interesting, different walks of life and stuff like that. And we took him on the tour of the plant. You know, so they got to see it each, I think. Did they all, each of them, press out 1 or 2, or was it just Soleil?
I believe so. Each got a chance behind the press. We got Paz went back there with them, kind of explained the engineering behind each of the presses, both the Denver and the 450.
Yep.
And he walked through it. You know, took them to the press area, and I think they each hammered out an ounce, and they got pictures with you.
Yeah.
By the presses too, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seemed like everyone just overall, you know, really was enjoying themselves. It was good to see.
Really good time. Yeah, so we did that, and then I think that, did I miss anything during the day? I know it was all production, and I worked on the art for the 7.
You mentioned earlier, Paz gave me and you a 1-hour tutorial on Tesla, which is great.
I definitely want to bring him on, you know, just to talk about that, because we've talked about all sorts of different kinds of energy, from solar to biogas to thorium, but this one really might be the next or old paradigm way of creating energy. And you know, if it has merit, it definitely sounds cheaper to do than thorium power plants, and you know, supposedly you can create just as much energy. But I'll have Paz explain it, and it should be a really interesting discussion with him. So we got back later that night and proceeded to have Paz do some of the most spectacular barbecue I think I've ever had. Just so much meat all over the place. It was really disgusting. Rob, do you want to type in on that, I guess?
Well, Paz is our resident barbecue expert, and so every once in a while I can talk him into manning the grill for a few hours
Two grills.
and rocking out a set of ribs and steaks and basically at the end of the night I had a meat headache or concussion or something. There was just so much meat flying around. And my wife did a great job too,
Yeah, your
just
wife
to
is a
throw a little credit
nutritionist.
her way. Yeah, so she did all kind of hors d'oeuvres and snacks and treats and healthy stuff for us too. So it was a good time, but you know, it was our kind of our commencement of the minting party that you know, we had a couple days of minting under our belt now, and so you know, we were celebrating as a team because a lot of work went into making all that stuff come together. And it was actually really funny because the one person that wasn't there to enjoy it with us was my father,
Yeah, who's out on the road again.
who probably deserved it just as much of it as anyone else, but he was helping us get
Well, we treated
the
him
silver shot.
later, so yeah, so yeah, first of all, I just want to give Rob you a little pat on the back. I know you've been really appreciative of the work that I did, but this none of this could have happened without your vision and your being able to you know, take all these different pieces and get them together. I mean, it's one thing to have a vision, but then there's a whole nother thing to go out there and do it. And I actually look forward to you know, working with you and Gus in the future to do bigger and better things, which we'll get into later. So yeah, then the next morning we got up at like, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning. His Rob's house is very nice, and his wife and children were great. So that we actually got up, got early, and we actually met a whole nother character who I'm sure that we're going to talk a lot about in the future. Gus, you want to take him?
Yeah, let me say something about, let me give the backdrop here real quick. Well, to yours and Rob's point, and your members probably already know this, but the don't want to eat 5 pounds of beef and then get on a plane
Yeah.
8 hours later.
Yeah. Two
Never,
flights.
never a good, yeah, never a good idea, especially at 5 or 6 in the morning. But a couple weeks ago, maybe like a month ago, we had gotten involved in the project, and you know, we were going forward, and I reached out to Chris randomly, and I'm like, hey, my lawyer, our lawyer, our general counsel for the for Mulligan, and he's known Rob for a while, and I've gotten the pleasure of meeting him like 4 months ago, and we became fast
Yeah.
friends as well. And I told Chris, I'm like, hey, our lawyer reached out to me, and Chris is like, oh my lawyer, what's this all about?
Yeah.
And we just, you know, just about all. I'm like, no, it's not what you think.
Yeah.
I'm like, he saw your stuff, said you're, you know, said he's a huge fan already, you know, and then I told Chris, I'm like, this isn't the kind of lawyer you're used to. I'm like,
Yeah.
this guy's a little rock and roll for a lawyer.
Yeah,
So
so
yeah.
and trust me, I've had like a lot of people. I lived in New York and New Jersey, and you know, there's so many lawyers out there, and anytime I hear like cool lawyer, I still have to roll my head and you know, 'cause I'm like, if you're going to dedicate that much time to like working in the system and stuff like that, I'm like, there's still some part of you that's just got that like, I don't know, shark mentality. And so we ended up rolling up to Damien's place in you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he comes rolling out, and he what did he do? He did he get that car for us, or
Yeah, he got the Escalade hooked up.
yeah, so yeah, we left the homely mobiles and got into this big fat Escalade, and we were rolling in style at 4 o'clock in the morning. And so yeah, we went to the airport. And Damien's a real cool character. Rob, do you want to discuss what his background is or what he's doing or?
I'm trying to think of the real quick overview for Damien. He's one of those guys where he's had such an interesting background, childhood, and he's gotten involved in so many different things, and he's always so passionate about whatever he does. You know, he went to work for his father's business, and his father said, "Well, we're going to get sued a whole lot, so you might as well go get a law degree." So he went out and got a law degree, and he's like, "Well, you're going to need to have to know how to manage the numbers, so you might as well become like a financial guy." So he goes out and becomes a CPA. So he's got you know, all those letters behind his name just
Yeah.
because there's a need for it. He's now talking about going back out and getting a medical degree because, you know, he's going to want to know how to treat field wounds and stuff like that
Yeah.
if he's on the battlefield too long. So
And
he's
that's not a joke. Like he's He's a shooter. He's a survivalist. He takes Krav Maga. He's a really locked on dude. And, you know, he's one of those guys, like, he walks into the room and you're like, that's a guy, you know, like, he's got it locked on. So, yeah, so he's very mild mannered until he gets talking. Then he's like, you know, he opens up. So, how'd you run across him?
Damien and I met years ago when he was working out with his trainer. We actually both had the same trainer. I was actually paying my personal trainer in silver. And so my trainer mentioned something to him saying, yeah, you guys are both silver guys. You should kind of get together. And then we ended up buying a cow together years ago. And we were both into the health and nutrition thing. And then we kind of didn't catch up while I was busy for a couple of years. And then we bumped into each other again last year at a Survival Expo. So yeah. He's a great guy. He's one of those guys that just everyone should have a guy like that because he's super resourceful and knows a whole lot of people. Yeah. And can read a contract, write an agreement out for you. So,
and more importantly, read people. Like he, just talking with him and all of his stories and stuff like that, he's just a really keen observer of humans. He had a very colorful background, so I think that gave him that kind of gut instinct to do that. But more importantly, and I don't think we'll talk about it here, but I mean, this guy's got like a super slick network of a very good individuals to know during the anger phase. Let's just put it that way. So we all rolled up, got onto the airplane. I think so Damien was in first class, right? So it was like the Jerry Seinfeld thing where he's having his, you know, feet waxed or whatever. We're sitting back in roach class, and he's making fun of it and stuff like that.
So. Damien explained it himself that he's a little bit of a prima donna when he travels. So yeah. He was up there with the elite, the ruling people, and
yeah,
we were
so
back
kept calling
there with
him
the
an oligarch. And
We landed in Denver for the connection because there's no easy way to get to Spokane.
Yeah.
And we all looked, me, Robin, and look at each other, and we're like, God, we're starving. And Damien's like, I just ate lobster.
Yeah, so he's playing this, like, I actually had to send the lobster back because it was too hot. Like, you know, he's, like, playing it up. It was really funny. Meanwhile, we're, like, begging for, an egg sandwich with, like, 15 minutes between flights. And he's, like, all fat and happy and stuff like that. Plus the fact that we were rolling with how many ounces of silver? Which was a whole other experience.
We took almost 1,500 ounces up the summit with us.
So
that was actually the strangest part of the whole trip for me was, you know, normally when I carry that much silver through the airport, it's a big deal. Everybody wants to see it. They want to open every tube. And I put my luggage on the belt. It goes through the x-ray scanner. And the guy looks at it and he looks at me and he goes, coins, and he points to the package, and I'm like, yeah, coins. He's like, okay, move along.
Yeah,
that was it.
Same thing with me actually coming back. At the airport, I had the choice of radiation or molestation, where you guys didn't have that. Somehow we got divided up, and you guys went into one line where they just used the x-ray thing. Is that what happened for you guys?
It was down, and I've heard stories that they're starting to take them out of major airports and stuff like that.
But,
so your line was still active. You lucked out. Don't worry. I got pictures and video.
Yeah,
and,
I opted out. I said, I'm not going through that. So I get the, you know, fairly tall, dark gentleman, takes me over and starts doing the frisk. And you guys are all sitting over there, like, laughing at the gate, like, ha-ha. So I'm like, dude, come get a picture of me. When are you going to get a picture of me standing at TSA? So you got a couple nice pictures of him with his hand on my ass and me, spreading legs. But, so that was funny. And then what else happened? Then we got – oh, so we're – yeah, then we were rolling through with all the silver. And I had the same experience. Even on the way back, I had a couple tubes of the SBS minus the S, Silver Shield coins without the S. And they saw the tubes, and the young kid who's – I don't know, probably like 22 years old or whatever. He's like, you know, what is that? I said, it's silver coins. He's like, I have to inspect that. I said, well, you're going to wait until I get done with the frisk so I can watch you inspect it because of that. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, no problem. Sorry, sir. And then within 2 seconds later, he comes back to me with like the dictator, like, no, I don't have to inspect it anymore. And, put it back in the bag and we're on our way. So, it was interesting because I was expecting to get more hassle. You know, like, you know, you hear all this Alex Jones, like, oh, the TSA's out to go get your gold and silver, and you guys better hide. You know, like, in our experience, I mean, we just rolled with 1,500 ounces, and it was like, hey, it's pretty cool, you know?
Outside of the overhead compartment not being big enough to hold the silver, yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, and then I think my favorite line was actually me, and as I'm at the final end of this carrying this, and I wasn't carrying half as much as you guys were, probably 200 or 300 ounces. Rob was like, you know, banking like 7 on his shoulder, and I was I bitched. I go, now I know why we don't use silver as money, so because it's so damn heavy. So that's ironic. Silver Shield actually did say that. Still great storage of wealth and very undervalued. But so yeah, we got to Silver Summit. We got there early, and then I guess kind of like the first story we have there is our Rob and I's informal talk on the stage and what happened there. So Rob, do you want to describe that one?
Well, it was the first day. You know, people are kind of you know, just kind of coming and going, strolling in, and so anyone that's a speaker there gets to, you know, stand up and do some Q&A and a little intro on when they're going to be talking, what they'll be talking about. And so we were, I think, numbers 3 and 4 up on stage, and so the first two guys kind of babbled on for a little while about quarter 3 earnings reports compared to quarter 2 earnings reports. Yeah, and they just kept going about nonsensical things that I couldn't even understand what they were saying.
There were Mr. Melman from the Melman Report and Al Corlin, I think, was up there. It was a lot of like old timer, you know, silver guys and hard money guys, and you know, they're up in their 60s and 70s. So Rob and I were like noticeably different. And there was only probably about, I don't know, 20 people in the audience. So it wasn't like we had a huge audience. And so, you know, it was my turn to speak. And first of all, Rob and I were like, do we even go up there? Like, we felt so out of place. Like, so we just kind of snuck up there, and we had like these red tags that symbolized that we were, speakers or something like that. So we kind of like sat in the back of the older gentleman, and they all passed the mic to us, and they were super gracious. Like, you know, one guy, you know, gave me a thumbs up while I was talking and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I went into my role about, you know, what are we doing here? You know, this isn't about, you know, a financial collapse. This is about, something much larger and what our consciousness is actively or passively supporting. And, you know, Rob got talking about, you know, all the stuff that we did with, AOCS and Dr. Paul and, you know, much bigger perspective things. And, so then I guess it came time for questions, right, Rob?
Yeah, and questions just started pouring in about you know, the things that we were talking about there. It was very apparent that the interesting things that people wanted to hear more about were the things that you and I were talking about.
That's right.
And I think that's very encouraging to see that you know, it's the right voice, the right time, and people want to know more about it. And so we gave them a heads up to come out and attend our panel, which was Friday morning, and I think the attendance was pretty good.
Yeah, Gus, can you please do the whole Ron Hera thing?
The well, I when I hear something I completely disagree with, you know, you want to be, you know, respectful. Because he's in his defense,
it was
his
time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he completely. I mean, he wasn't even letting you know you guys finish when he was answering a question. So
let me just set this up for Gus first. So let me set this up. So this is like the main hall. So it's probably like 10 chairs on each side and then like 40 deep. I mean, it was a pretty long room. And so we're up on this podium and everybody's sitting within the first 5 rows or so. And it comes time for a question. And, whatever, like four or five questions in, some dude all the way up in the back comes strolling up asking his question like he owns a place. So he's like, so I don't think this hyperinflation's a thing that's going to happen. And what's your talk on that? And so I got into, you know, the unsustainable nature of the system and that, you know, we'll no longer be able to secure the petrodollar and that we'll, I think that the hyperinflation is going to come from outside the United States and not necessarily from people, you know, emptying their bank accounts and going to buy, you know, a week's worth of groceries because, you know, 50% of Americans don't even have $400 in their savings account. So I said that, you know, it's going to come from all these countries dumping their dollars overseas, you know, Japan and China dumping their dollars and the 18 other agreements and stuff like that. And so I thought that was it. So, Gus, tell him what he ended up, like, doing for the
next 10 minutes. Well, yeah, to your point, you're pretty – the whole way you described it was spot on, too. He the way he strolled up, put his arms up on four chairs. It was kind of like reminding me of the jerk who takes up three handicap spots at the grocery store, yeah. Parking
so then
diagonally.
He sits in the front row with his arms out, his, like, still talking really loud.
Yeah, like he owns a place, feet up. I'm like, who is – like, so right away, kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
I'm trying to read his name tag. I'm like, who's this jerk off?
Yeah, I'm like, is that like? I'm like, he doesn't look like Sprott, but he's acting like an oligarch, right? So, he gets into it with you and Rob, and then I heard a few. Basically, he was laying it out very black and white. You know, these are the only scenarios, and here's why. And then I heard him say the phrase Austrian economics, and there's a lot of guys out there like that. They basically have read like four chapters of Peter Schiff's book, and all of a sudden they're Hayek, and I'm like, all right. So I put up with it. And finally, long story short, after you guys were going back and forth with him, I started arguing with the guy
right
from the
over
audience.
His shoulder
I'm,
at
yeah,
this point, right.
I'm like that's yeah. I'm like yeah. The petrodollar is one scenario. M3 is another. Derivatives are another. I'm like, there's like 60 scenarios. I ran. And he's like, no, there's just three. So, I was still – we had, so it was our Ron, first day. Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't know who he was or whatever. And Ron, I think, submitted articles to us or I don't know, whatever. But he's been associated with this. He knew damn well who I was. I just didn't know who he was. But as soon as Gus started doing his Rain Man rant, like, no, there's actually 60 scenarios and they could be the petrodollar. Like, one good thing about Gus is, like, he'll pepper the hell out of you in the middle of a debate if you're wrong. Because he just starts going through stuff. So I think he took his cue to, end it. So that was the end of that. And Rob and I were like, what the hell is that? So Ron walks up to us later. So we got off stage and literally like, you know, there wasn't a lot of people there at that point. Now there's probably 20 people in the audience. But like 10 to 15 people like came over to Rob and I when we were off stage to the right, leaving the other three speakers with no like, people asking them anything, so they're all asking us, like, you know, what do you think, and good to meet you, and, you know, I bought your coin, and stuff like that, and so Ron, like, cuts in there and starts going, you know, I just want to let you know I wasn't trying to give you a hassle. I'm like, I don't care, I'll talk about anything to anybody, I got nothing to hide, and he goes, well, I don't want you to think that I was being overly aggressive, and I'm like, I don't care, but obviously you thought you were over-aggressive, or else you wouldn't come up here, so I didn't spend much time with him for the rest of the week because of that. And then, that was our, I think we had our dinner that night, right?
Wednesday night was dinner. That's right.
Yeah. So we got to meet, Russ Zold and his wife, Angie?
Lori.
Lori, that's right. So yeah, we met them. Super nice people. We treated them to dinner, and I finally got to meet David Morgan, finally, in person, which was really nice. I mean, he's been so supportive of everything that I've been doing. He actually nominated me to be Silver Bull of the Year up there, and it's very apparent that this is all mining. Like, they do not care about physical stackers whatsoever. This is a mining expo. There was mining exhibitors. They had the best spots. They're the ones obviously paying for this whole event. So David had told me that Silver Bull of the Year, since he had started this 10 years ago, has always been about the person that brought the most momentum to the silver story, and he felt that I had deserved it. Past recipients had been David Morgan, have been Eric Sprott had won it in the past, and this year I think that they saw my video called Systemic Risk in Mining Stocks and decided maybe it's not a good idea to have Chris Duane win this prize, considering that all these mining companies are there. So I really tried to be respectful, and I did not get into any talks or debates about it or really had the chance to talk about mining and why it's not necessarily a good investment through the anger phase. But you know, we had the dinner, got to meet the Zolds, and I think we had, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 people at dinner at the restaurant. It was really good. I mean, did you have any stories from David when he was sitting over there? I didn't really get to talk to him all that much.
He gave us a little bit of a story about the last time he wore his silver shimmery costume.
Yeah, that's a whole other story,
that
too.
He was wearing again for the 10th anniversary. My father made it into town. We had originally sent him from Dallas to Salt Lake, and then we had to give him a little bit of a detour just because we didn't feel confident doing business with anymore with the vendor that was there. So we sent him all the way up to Coeur d'Alene. And so he rolled
just
into town.
Couple hundred miles. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it was only an extra $1,000. His odometer for the trip was $39.94 Dallas to Dallas. So it's just under 4,000 miles for the whole adventure. But it all worked out, and that was great. So he joined us for dinner Wednesday night to enjoy that part of it and get a good night's sleep and put him back on the road back to Dallas the following day. So nothing too exciting down the other end of the table. Everything was good, nice, calm, quiet, and perfect night to relax and get some rest.
And is that our first Berwick experience? When did he come around? Actually, before we get to Berwick, Bix Weir. Gus, can you please describe Bix Weir to people?
Well, I don't know how candid I should be. I'm using the word candid very specifically, but was Bix on the opening panel with you guys?
I don't know. He wasn't up there, but I know he had a very prominent speaking spot.
Without jumping ahead to night two, which I pulled another Rain Man moment on Bix night two, getting into a lot of the specifics and why he should perhaps stop calling the exact hour in which the collapse happened and the exact price when silver will be
out.
Yeah,
the whole good guy, bad guy meme.
Yeah. So I Bix was on night two, but yeah, he, you know, it is what it is. And I think the way I articulate it is, you know, a lot of these, and you've done videos about this in great detail, Chris, you know, it's not the problem. A lot of people articulate the problems. It's the solutions. And that's where I think I'm on board with you. I don't like the fear mongering. I don't like misinformation. I don't like disinformation.
Hope mongering is, I think, just as bad. It keeps people out of, you know, hoping that somebody's going to come save them when the reality is they have to come save themselves.
Yeah, and when people give misinformation too or disinformation, a lot of the time what it'll do is it'll make the 99%, the 99% of the public, 98% of the public that isn't aware of the message we're trying to spread, it basically gives them a bad taste in their mouth to those of us who are more, you know, truthful or are honest about maybe not being able to, you know, predict the exact hour, date, second, and time that. So that you know, that was kind of my message for him, and I'm also, not to go too deep into it, but I'm also of the belief, and many people disagree with this, but this is just the stance I take, that, you know, I want silver to remain kind of affordable in regards to Federal Reserve notes as long as possible. I'd rather have it stay hovering, you know, where it's at
30,
until
50,
until a minute before the collapse, and all of a sudden let it shoot up to 5,000 an ounce. Who cares, you know, like. But I want to be able to stack it as much as I can from now until then.
Any of you guys have any experience with Jeffrey Christian? I know he – I haven't watched – I didn't watch him. I didn't listen to him. But I know he was very belligerent in both of his speeches. I think he had two prominent speaking spots each day. So, I mean, it was just odd that they would invite him back, especially after the great debate last year, then give him two speaking spots. And then really just – he just apparently bashed everybody in the silver movement. You know, saying that there is no manipulation and that, you know, called into question again, GATA and all those guys and their reputation and everything. Did you hear anything about what he said?
I heard what he was talking. I believe actually, Chris, now that it's coming back to me, I think he was on the panel with you guys the first night, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't.
On the intro panel.
No, he wasn't.
Because I do remember seeing him in one of the panels where he started talking about
one with Bix, but I don't know.
I think me and Damien wandered into that one, and he was talking about derivatives exposure and, you know, whatever. He was getting into his usual spiel, and there's some. I don't know why they invited him back either, because there was just a lot of negative, you know, and
like in
big
the audience
time,
too. Like, I don't think the
big
audience
time
reached it.
It's almost like what this guy just, I mean, he just sounded like a total, you know, Wall Street guy and, you know, total, you know, we're, you know, treasuries are your friends. And it was just like, what is this guy talking about? Like,
and it was funny because he had apparently had a prior run into one of Kerry's friends, where they got into an argument, and this guy goes, "I know it's very high school, but I have thrown away all the stuff on his table." And he's, you know, like, because you bring out all the, like, this print material and stuff that kind of advertised. He did, like, CPM Group, and he told me, he goes, "I know it's high school, but I had to do it. I had to throw away all the shit on his table." So, you know, to see grown men resort down to, like, high school tactics to express their feeling towards another man is just an odd thing. And then I guess the only other kind of flavorful guy out there was Jeff Berwick from Dollar Vigilante. I heard that his speech had a memorable quote that the older ladies in the audience really appreciated. Anybody remember what it was?
I believe he went to, and Damien regurgitated it to me, because we were at the booth at the time, but Damien saw the speech, and Jeff said, "You people think you're free. You people think you're free. I need to drive into Idaho to see naked women." And there were a few old ladies in the crowd, and yeah, she leaned over and she's like, "What did he just?" And they're taking notes, and they're like, "What did he just say? Naked ladies?" And then they go back, start jotting notes down again.
It was
a pretty good line. Again, I didn't hear it. It was just regurgitated it to me through Dan.
So Jeff apparently likes to talk about flying down to South America and try to pick up girls with that and stuff like that. You actually one of the girls that you were talking to that you got along with really great, he was trying to move in on it, and you promptly shut him down. But I don't want to get into that, but it was definitely a lot of colorful characters, and the biggest one is Eric Sprott. So, you know, here I am talking about the Silver Bullet, Silver Shield medallion being a great conversation piece. I had had the opportunity of emailing Eric a couple times, and I never got a response. I'm 100% positive it's his personal email, but quite wisely he's never, associated with me. When I saw him outside, I think he was smoking, and I was outside, and I saw an opportunity to walk up to him and give him one of these off-strike Silver Bullet, Silver Shield medallions. And to introduce myself. So, I kind of caught him off. He was very gracious. I mean, out of all the people there next to David Morgan, certainly not a guy you would expect to have $1 billion, and very friendly and gracious. I think everybody had such a really good response with him. And I basically took 5 minutes to talk to him about, to let him know I was giving him this coin. It was one of 860. It's an off-strike. It's the first of a bigger series. We've actually gone on to sell, I think I told him, 57,000 at the time, and we only came out with it a month ago, to which he was very impressed with, because I know that he had just recently launched his own silver medallion, and I can guarantee he's done nowhere near that. So he was impressed with that. And then I went on to explain our experience, Rob and I's experience with Ron Paul, and how that was actually the genesis of this coin. He was impressed with that, and then finally told him about my YouTube channel, where we gotten 5 million views in a year, and then he really looked up. He goes, "Wow, that's really good." So I said, "Well, you know, I don't want to take up your time, but I did want you to have this, and if there's ever an opportunity to speak at a later date, let me know." And I let him go at that. And so the wonderful thing is now he's never not going to know who I am, because you don't take a silver coin like that and throw it away. He'll have read Silver Bullet and Silver Shield. Actually, when I told him about Silver Bullet, Silver Shield, how it was read 450,000 times and translated into 7 languages, he seemed to recognize that. I really didn't give him too much time to talk or anything, but I don't know why, maybe just out of nerves or whatever, but I made sure that I got what I wanted to say out. And so now I'm sure that the coin's now sitting on his mantelpiece somewhere. And did you guys have a chance to speak with him or run into him?
Well, right after, about 10 minutes after your conversation, I bombed a Canadian sitter from.
Oh, yeah, you did. So I didn't know you smoking, but that's pretty ballsy, dude.
Yeah, I think I called him ES. I'm like, "Hey, ES, throw one of those Canadian cigarettes over."
So that's funny. All right, so I think that's pretty much all the colorful people we wanted to cover. We did them, and then let's see. And then the next we went out that night again for dinner and stuff like that. And then the next day we had to get up real early to do our panel. Now, let me get this straight. Like, we go all the way out there. We did all this promotion with the Airstream and the you guys actually produced the Silver Summit medallions, correct?
That's right.
So we did all this effort. David Morgan nominated me for Silver Bull of the Year, which was promptly turned down. David couldn't have been more gracious and stuff. And can you describe, Rob, the room that we got to have the ability to speak in?
Well, fortunately, we were right next to the main speaking hall in a little side room. But when I say little side room, I do mean little side room. It was not the main speaking hall. It had a couple rows of chairs in it and was set up kind of oblong so that
picture like a large family room.
Yeah, it was kind of cozy. And so I looked at it and I said, I'm not sure if that room's going to be big enough. And they had something scheduled in the other room. Yeah. So our slot came along Friday morning and we're watching people file into the room, and I'm like, oh, gosh, we're definitely going to have trouble here.
Yeah.
So
it was pretty cool because I know that the seating room got filled up early. There was a good buzz in the room. Then people were starting to stand behind, in standing room only. And then I think one of the guys told me that they were actually going into this other guy's presentation in the main hall and pulling chairs out of the back of his speech with people weren't obviously in him. They wanted to listen to me and taking the chairs out and putting it into our room just so they could hear us. And go ahead. I mean, then the time constraint, that was the other thing I didn't even know. I thought for sure we would have an hour. Like, what's the big deal?
It was definitely encouraging to see the room packed. I mean, literally wall to wall, standing room only, people rushing in with chairs, trying to get in there, pushing each other out of the way. I mean, it's kind of just funny to watch that sometimes.
Yeah.
and then we got started, and it turned out we only had 20 minutes to speak. And there were three of us there between four of us.
Yeah.
David brought a guy with him, and then the two of us. So there were four people on the panel, and I think our combined speaking time was probably 5 to 7 minutes altogether. So it was a little frustrating, but it was good to get in front of that many people that obviously wanted to be in the room, and good to leave them looking for more. And so we had a lot of great conversations after that back at the booth, talking to people about commodity banking.
Let's cover what we. The whole mission that we were bringing up there, and this is kind of leading into where we're going in the future. Like, it's cool to do silver coins and stuff like that, but the real future that Rob and I and we're all working for is the idea that we can create some sort of monetary paradigm based off of our silver. So Rob actually had this when he first told me. I was like, dude, this is a billion-dollar idea. Like, this is like Jay-Z's going to want this stuff. So I think we can fairly say we can start talking about this now.
Yeah, we've been working for a while now to produce a silver debit card, and there are two components to it. I think one is that it's actually a minted 1 ounce, sheet of silver that's the exact same size, thickness, dimensions as a normal credit card would be. And strangely, it comes out almost exactly on the head at 31.1 grams. I think it's like 31.8 grams.
It was meant to be.
Yeah, so if you get the the diameter, or I'm sorry, the length, the width, and the thickness, and you multiply it out by the weight in grams for silver, it's it's almost right there on 31.1. So the first part is we have produced now a minted credit card that's minted from pure silver. And the second part is we're working on getting that linked to the accounts at the Free Lakota Bank as the first institution, but any bank, hypothetically, so that when you swipe that thing, you're swiping and spending real silver. And there are a lot of things that go into that, and this may not be the appropriate time to explain it in detail. But the bottom line is that we want to see every man, woman, and child with the ability to bank and store their wealth in something physical like silver or gold or copper or anything they want, and to be able to monetize that at will on the spot whenever they need to use it somewhere that only accepts some other currency, like dollars.
Yeah. We're definitely going to have to get into that because it's a whole different mindset. But the idea that we have a successful mint now up and running, that we have the connections with Lakota, that Rob's figured out the logistics of selling and monetizing the silver and doing all that other stuff. This is definitely the wave of the future, and there's a lot of other guys out there who there was two other similar designs out there, but they were still stuck within the banking model of what we're trying to get away from, and they rely upon Bank of America or something to do all this. And I think between the Mint and Lakota and stuff like that, we have a lot of different attributes that a lot of guys aren't going to be able to touch.
Yeah, there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle, and we've been working for years now to test different ideas and strategies and components and get the bugs worked out. And that's the phase we're in right now, that we're wrapping up a lot of that and rolling out these features now, slowly but surely. And developing a parallel system that again is complementary, that people can use if they want to take advantage of something different.
Yeah, and I think that the little Silver Show group that I have is just ideal for testing this out, being beta testers on this, because we're all fairly heavy into silver. We're all working towards the next paradigm. We would all have an interest in making sure that this works, and if there's bugs and hicks. Hiccups like we had experienced with producing the silver coin, we'd be the right people to do that. But I don't want to get too much into that. It's definitely a whole nother, much larger discussion that we can work on later. So let me think. Oh, so then my whole point, so that's what Rob main thing. He's like, I got 5 minutes. This is what I'm going to blast you guys with this. And he showed the card and talked about the basics of how it worked and, to look for it. And I got a lot of people going, wow, that's really cool. Because think about it. We all have silver, but the reality is it's tough to use it. And what this would allow us to do is actually go out and you could actually have your 1 ounce silver bling bling card with a magnetic strip on it, laser etched with your thing, minted, looking sharp, laminated, and this thing. I mean, can you imagine bringing that out? And the wonderful thing I love about it, Rob, I don't think I've kind of impressed it upon you, is that to the sheep out there who are taking this in, they don't know that this is silver. All they know, that's a different card. This guy's obviously successful to have some sort of odd card like this, but they're getting paid in the money that they want to get paid in, okay?
Right.
Whereas
right.
We're using physical silver in the market, I just think that is so amazing, and I think once we get past this beta test and if the timing's right, I'm a big fan of waiting till after the collapse to really bring this out and do something with it. I think that we're going to be providing solutions into a humanity that is going to be desperate for it. And, I think that this is definitely going to be the next big thing. And I give you a ton of credit for coming up with it and then once again doing it. There's a lot of guys out there who talk this stuff, but Rob's actually the one that's going out there and doing this stuff.
Well, thank you. And again, it's just, it's one good idea, but there are a lot of good ideas out there. And so, the whole idea of the open currency standard is that anyone can develop these ideas, and whether you do it on your own or you do it in partnership with us or you rely on some tools and resources that we can help provide and we partner on it, whatever it is, we just want to see people getting creative and coming up with solutions to the problems that we face today. And what we found again and again is that a lot of people think that these things can't be done or they're illegal, and it's not true. It's that no one has ever done it or done it successfully. And, the case of the Liberty Dollar is a perfect example of that. People say, well, you can't have your own currency. It's illegal. Well, no, it was one guy that was doing it illegally. It doesn't make the idea of a complementary currency illegal. No. It just has to be done a little bit more intelligently. And so that's what –
you can't be taking what – was essentially $20 worth of silver, stamping $50 on it, and then encouraging those people to go to Walmart and spend $50 on that. I mean, there were so many flaws against it. It actually had the dollar written on it. It looked like American currency. They were actively doing that sort of thing. So there's a lot of differences between what Rob's doing and.
But let me give you a better example.
Yeah.
When the Lakota project launched back in 2008, before that I had met with some very high powered and well known and well respected banking attorneys here in the state of Texas, and I sat down with them. I said, I want to start a bank, and they're like, well, you can't do that because you need to have a license, and it takes years to get a license and hundreds of millions of dollars. And I said, well, do I need to have a license? And they're like, well, you have to have a license if you want to be FDIC insured. And I said, well, what if I don't want to be FDIC insured? And they're like, well, then you don't need a license. I'm like, well, okay. And they're like, but that would never work. I'm like, well, why not? Well, yeah. You couldn't get any customers if you weren't FDIC insured. And I said, well, why don't you let me worry about that? And these guys looked at each other and they're like, well, this is really weird, not outright illegal, but just nobody would ever do it that way. That's dumb. You would want to be FDIC insured because that's such a powerful marketing tool. Yeah. And so again, it's not like these are the most original.
If we actually did do this, I'd be like, not FDIC insured, but fully backed by Silver.
That's exactly right. So there are a lot of good ideas out there, and if you're listening to this and you have one, let us know what it is, and we'll see what we can do to help you get it off the ground as well. So
and that's the kind of thing that I'm going to be working for. This is actually we're entering the second year of the Silver Shield Group. This is the thing, like, I feel like I've laid out enough intellectual foundation. I think now it's time to start getting some of these ideas in motion. Even if they're small projects, I think that I have come to respect you guys a lot more based off of this small business deal that we're doing here. I think it's time that, if people have these kind of ideas, we may not blow it up now, but I think it's good to kind of get involved, even if it's on a consulting level, to help people, get more familiar with each other and actually get more involved in each other. And I think that we'll have an opportunity for people to say, hey, I may not have ideas, but I have capital, or I may have ideas and no capital. And I think that we might be able to start doing something on a more personal level. And I think that's the best way. I mean, one of the things that I've felt bad over this past year is that we really haven't had much success of getting people to work together. And yet all the ones that have been successful had to do with doing some business. And I think back, what better way of actually determining if somebody's trustworthy than sending 5,000 ounces to them and seeing
that's
it there.
Well, that's a pretty big trial, just for the record.
Well, to me, it's relatively small, because if I can't trust you with 5,000 ounces, then we're going to be dealing with magnitudes larger of trust issues in the future. And I'd rather, if you're a scumbag now and I get taken for 5,000 ounces, so be it. I'd rather that than later on down the road, and it's magnitudes more of responsibility or things. So that's why I kind of like working on these levels together to build that trust and to see what kind of men that we're dealing with and that the values that they carry.
Well, that was the same point that came up towards the end of the panel discussion. Somebody threw out the question about fraud and risks, and all that's going to be out there. You got to, if we start developing a new system outside of the conventional one, you're going to have to pay that much more attention to who you're doing business with and and what their reputation is and their character and their values. And, it's that much more important, because you may not have some of those safety nets to rely on if for some reason you fall. So it's critical to really keep your eyes and ears open and pay very close attention to the, like you said, the men that you may be getting involved with, because it matters now, especially when you're shrugging off the old system.
Yeah, and I think that's the fallacy of the FDIC. It gives that false sense of security. Fine, they may be able to pay you back your $250,000, but the time that you would have that as a problem, chances are we're having a currency crisis where that current $250,000 is not worth anything.
Right.
And there's nothing there. It's still a bunch of, digits in the system. So, to your point, when people said, well, how could we trust a system like that? That's why I came right back and I said, well, you have to start, surrounding yourself with good people now, because if you don't find the good people while the lights are still on, while the system's still going, you're never going to know what it is on the other side. And that's half the reason why I shut my group down. And even though we're slowly getting smaller and some people are dropping out, I'd much rather have, at the end of the day, 20 people who have stuck with me, who have really understand me, really supported me in doing this, and that we actually get to know each other, than thousands of people who are sort of into this stuff. I mean, that's I like the positioning. I like what we're doing, and I really give you guys a lot of credit for being a part of that. And my only thing that I talked about at the 5 minutes that I had, I looked right into the camera and I talked about the consciousness thing. What are we doing with our time and energy here, and what are you going to be doing different so that you're not the next oligarch? So the recurring joke, the whole thing was to walk away and to you know, that you're starting to sound like an oligarch, because that's what I had come to determine, that, you know, who knows, with some of these guys that may be on our side in the metals industry turn out to be no different than the bad guys we're dealing with. And specifically, I had found this out while I was there, that I don't even know if I have the email, but it's from GATA's website, and I showed this to Gus, and it was written by Jim Sinclair in 2004, I think, and I printed it up and I gave it to Gus on my phone, and I showed him it, and I come to find out that Jim Sinclair's father was Bertrand Seligman, whose family goes back to early partnerships with the Rothschilds, founder of Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, and among many other institutions, and that Jim in this article was proud that his heritage goes back to that. So I'm thinking, man, this guy is literally derived from the same guys that have been spreading debt and death, and he's part of this new Hegelian dialectic. We have this paper world reserve debt-based fiat currency going down, and what is their solution that they're going to trump out? Gold. Gold standard, gold reserve, gold this, gold that. And I'm thinking, you know what? This gives me more reason not to want gold at all, especially with this snarky comment where he said that gold will provide you protection in the transfer and silver will only give you a cheap thrill. And I had probably about five or six members going, oh, but Chris, Jim Sinclair says that silver is no good. And so that's when I started researching this guy. I'm like, something doesn't smell right with him. So I come to find out on Gatto's website, I'll have to post a link up when I put this up, that he says that you know, he's part of this family. He's real proud of it. He even mentions that it was in a book called Our Gang, or Gus, do you remember what it was called? Our Family, Our Crowd?
Yeah, I remember he referenced the book, but I never heard of it before, so I don't remember offhand what it was called exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, so, but that's my point. Like, some of the guys that we're dealing with now in our group that, you know, we may be intellectually aligned with, where they describe the problem properly, but what is their solution? And that's why I think so many people who have been attracted and have kept with this group understand that, you know, anybody can describe the problem, but what's their solution? And while I may not have all the solutions, I am actively working towards it. I'm going to find something that's intellectually honest and that works within the time frame that I see coming. So yeah, I'm gonna post more about that. But that to me was really shocking, and I don't want to start into another blogger battle and you know, who's right and stuff like that. But beware about these people out there, and don't just necessarily give them your attention because they seem to describe a problem properly. What else happened? Oh, so then after we finished this, I mean, we had a packed room, you know, probably next to David Morgan's main speech, probably the most packed out of all the speeches that were up there. And, you know, albeit we were up against a lot of mining presentations going over ore grades. I mean, not a lot of fun there. But what did Shauna say? She seemed like she wanted to, like, corner Gus into the corner of the room and, you know, get something out of him. Can you describe Shauna? Shauna is the girl that runs Silver Summit. Can you describe what her feeling was before the event and then after we had our 20 minutes of fame?
Well, yeah, like, and to get a little backdrop without going in too much detail, yeah. The Silver Summit has some hierarchy to it and decision making, which is fine. It's run ultimately and put on by Cambridge House. I'm just kidding. But Shauna had to get sign off from numerous people to before she even agreed to any of the promotion or having us out there as speakers or us having a table, et cetera. And she did. Eventually, she got through to everyone and got all the necessary things on board. But there was there wasn't really buy-in, and there was some hesitation in regards to finally, you know, when we did get the green light. But after about a week of us being green lighted to go out there, she started getting massive Cambridge House, getting some really solid feedback. So Shauna was, the last 2-3 weeks,
trying to lock us in.
Real positive, trying to get us back, trying to solidify us for, you know, one of the future Cambridge or Silver Summit shows, et cetera. And this was before that we had a standing room only room and, you know, people high-fiving us at the table and, you know, we're really did a great 3 days. So after you guys were up there with David, she came in again, and this time she was positive even before the panel discussion. But after the panel discussion, she was talking about, you know, us opening the National Silver Summit for 2 hours. Like, you know, the open currency discussion opens up Silver Summit. So, like, mass cross-promotional stuff, yeah. You know, longer time.
Something in Palm Beach and California. Yeah. I mean, like, it was like she wanted us to, like, go on tour with them. And I'm like, I didn't really have a great time at this one. I don't know why I'd be, you know, wanting to do the next one. So,
Chris, just for the record, I actually did have a really great time.
You just wanted to get away. But that's my point. Like, I felt like the whole vibe of the whole thing was so, I don't know, just different. It wasn't it was good to go see people, but it, like, if I went back there again, I don't know if I'd have so much fun the next time.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, whatever. But anyways, they really liked us. You know, Shauna was tried to corner us, and I did my own advice and walked away halfway through the conversation because I wasn't going to commit to anything. Like, I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, Gus Ever, the diplomat, congressman, said, you know, we'll get back to it and think about it and stew on it, and who knows, but whatever. So what did we do? We finished up that day. Did anything else happen that night before we headed back? I know we ate again.
Yeah, we actually had a little bit of an altercation there at the steakhouse.
With who? All right, so actually, it's time to bring in Silver Willie. So Will Lear is actually a Silver Shield group member. He left South Carolina with his wife and child after coming into the group and then actually hooked up with Great Southern Coins. So talk about following your passion and doing something that you like. So I'm sure he's going to be happy about this. So Will is, I come to find out that Great Southern Coins was the largest bullion retailer of our Silver Bullet Silver Shield coin until I was able to get another one of my members actually brought in another guy who ordered 5,000 ounces. Basically just before we went to dinner. So I was like, you know, the whole week I'm like, oh, this is Will. He's the largest retailer of the Silver Bullet, Silver Shield coin, stuff like that. So he was all excited about that. We actually talked about how, and this kind of gets back to what I was talking about with the, how many of those, first, coins that were messed up, and then the second one that was a little bit better, and then the one without the S and all that other stuff. So essentially I have like the first of four different kinds of the Silver Bullet, Silver Shield, and Debt and Death A Trust coins, and they're, you know, rare. I mean, and they have a great story. I mean, geez, we've probably done about 3 hours worth of videos of all the stuff that we had. I talked to Will about auctioning this off on eBay, and, you know, I'm not a big fan of eBay or PayPal or stuff, but I come to find out that Great Southern is a, you know, number one, they were very supportive of this launch, but they're also the number one bullion seller on eBay, so they have a huge presence there. They're the top-rated seller on eBay, and I said, you know, how cool would it be to auction off these four coins, you know, I'll sign them and let them, you know that they were the first of, you know, 60 or 120, I'll get all the exact numbers and stuff like that. And my daughter has two kids. Now, you know, I keep talking about cancer throughout these things. Two kids. One is probably in kindergarten or even younger than that. How old is Molly? Three. She's 3 years old and had leukemia. She's already been in remission, and the poor little girl's growing her hair back. And then who's the boy in third grade? Ashton. What kind of cancer does he have? So we're going to find out. But I come to find out that two of the kids around my daughter's age and group have cancer. And, you know, the area that we live in is blue collar. I mean, there's certainly not a lot of wealth here. And they've been, you know, I know the hospitals have been very helpful, and the church that we go to has been very helpful. So I thought, how cool would it be to actually auction these coins off and donate it to these two young kids instead of giving it to some large, you know, charity that gets billions of dollars and it wouldn't matter. We would do that. So Will's actually going to send me nice stuff to put these four coins in. We're going to put it on eBay and promote it. So I think between this coin being new and rare and Great Southern Coins being so big on eBay and then helping out these two little kids, I think it's just a win-win-win for everybody. But Will was actually describing this coin outside. We were outside having a smoke, and some lady came out, and Will asked her, and she was, 50-year-old lady, right?
Mid-50s, yeah.
Mid-50s. Obviously completely inebriated. And so Will was talking to her, and very nice. Will's very gentlemanly up until later in the story, and asked her what was she doing out here, and she proceeded to say that she was a big fan of silver, laced with a whole bunch of F-bombs and stuff like that. So we could see that we had a very colorful, eccentric woman on our hands. So Will goes, oh, that's cool. Then you might have seen this. And he pulls out his silver bullet, silver shield medallion that I had signed for him. So now it's even more rare, you know, and Will's like a huge fan and all this other stuff. So he showed her this, and without even looking at the coin, she took the coin out of his hand and threw it right into her bra. Like, didn't even look at it. And he's like, are you kidding me? She goes, come and get it. And I was like, oh boy, what are we dealing with here? So Gus, again, tries to apply his Rain Man logic and said, how could you do this to a guy? We got young children involved and stuff like that. And she goes, I don't care. Like, she was just completely wasted. So at that point, I followed my own advice and walked away. But I left Gus and Will there. So Gus, can you tell the rest of it?
Yeah, it basically got ugly in a hurry with a lot of profanity, which I'll spare your audience.
Yeah.
Assuming it's a family audience. So
yes.
It got nasty, and it got nasty fast. And as to your point, to Will's credit, he refrained from acknowledging what really you could just say she basically stole and just wouldn't give it back.
Yeah.
She went on, her drunken.
Just to describe Will, I mean, he's a young guy. I mean, he's maybe late 20s, early 30s, brand new child. He's working for a coin store. So, I mean, and he's a big fan of ours. He's a member of the Silver Show group. Like, this had a lot of significance. I knew that he wasn't going to let it go, but I didn't want to be there to see how he was going to convince this lady, who is obviously out of her mind, to do this. So I figured I'd let Gus and Will take care of it. So then what did she do? She went back to her table and started laughing about it to her husband and friend.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. When
Will saw it on the other side of the restaurant, right?
I think
like
me or Rob, I think me or Rob might have instigated it. Actually, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's laughing about it. Look, weird.
What happened was Will went to the bathroom, and the bathroom was right next to where they were sitting.
Yeah.
And he's sitting in there going to the bathroom, listening to her laugh and tell the story from her perspective about how funny it was that she just stole this coin.
Yeah.
And he comes out of the bathroom, comes back to the table, and he's like, I can't let this go. He's like, this woman just stole this coin, and now she's laughing about it. So that's when he got up and decided he was going to go get it back.
So go ahead, Gus. What did he do?
I was not at the table with him, so I cannot tell you exactly what took place at the table. I know it took place at the back end of the table. We ordered them a round of drinks like any classy gentleman would do. And we basically pulled the waiter up to the side and asked him, what is the most awful drink you have here at the bar? We'd like to order a bunch of them for it.
What was it? A shot of tequila with mayonnaise in it or something?
Mayonnaise wrapped in with a pork chop or something. I don't even know. It was
so gross.
Greasy Mexican.
So we sent a few of those over after the table had ultimately completely cussed Will out.
Yeah,
and
sent him back.
Yeah, he went back to the table, had some sort of verbal exchange with them, and the husband, I guess, was very nice, but the other dinner guest was just completely, telling Will to – exactly right.
But Will basically sat down, from what I understand, sat down next to the lady, explained to her that, that she stole it and he wants it back, and that on no certain terms that's what's going to happen. The husband immediately said, honey, just give it back to him. The other guy started being belligerent. End of the day, he got the coin back. But then when we sent over the drink, she came back over with this disgusting drink, drinking it right?
Yeah, she's gulping it down.
Meanwhile, she's like, slurring. Oh, what is this? This is so disgusting.
She's
drinking away.
Mess. So I couldn't get away from her quick enough because I was just like, I cannot be around this lady. So yeah, that was pretty much the end of the whole story. I think we had overall, we had a really good time. I really enjoyed hanging out with you guys. I was telling, I don't know, one of you too, I said, ever since I left the Marine Corps, I've always felt like I've never really fit in. Like, when you're in the Marines, you're brought up with a bunch of guys who are, you know, they have the same motivation, the same willpower, the same kind of goal and cause, and that camaraderie that forms is unlike anything else you've ever had in your life. And I think that's one of the main reasons why so many Marines tend to, you know, if they get out, they miss getting back in, and they like doing it. And I told one of you guys, I said, this is the first time in my life since then. I mean, it's been 2003, so almost 10 years that I haven't had that sense of camaraderie or that kind of spirit of doing something. And that I really did have that this past week. So I wanted to thank you guys again for all your hospitality, all the hard work, all the stress and stuff that you've had to go through to get this done. You know, I'm really glad to have run across you, and I look forward to doing more stuff with you in the future.
Likewise, I don't want to speak for Rob, but I think we feel the same in regards to like-minded individuals, and we thank you and honestly all your members and stuff for being patient and being kind for what has been a very, you know, hard work, being, you know, effort, roll up the sleeves, you know, 5 to 6 weeks for us to put this all together and to be able to pull it off. So again, thanks not only to you for just everything you do and for us just, you know, completely seeing eye to eye on, you know, 99% of the stuff we talk about, but for your members too. They've been great. I mean, everyone who calls up, even it doesn't matter what issue would come up, you've just been great the whole time. So we appreciate them as well.
We even touched on that the with the PayPal thing, we refunded $250,000, but the overall response was I think 95% of the people reordered again, but a large majority of them doubled the order. Like, I mean, that's the kind of confidence that, you know, allows Rob to go out and go get, you know, $200,000 presses and, you know, go move all this around and do all that other stuff. I mean, that's the kind of confidence, and I hope that we continue to earn, you know, the respect and not only with this, but, you know, with future endeavors. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all working towards, you know, building a community, and this is how it starts. It starts with, you know, little business ventures. It grows into, you know, the next big thing and, you know, the next idea. And, you know, I like the kind of network we have. I mean, we got, you know, Rob with his Mint. We got their relationship with the Lakota Bank. I mean, even Pete Mistralis, we really didn't talk much about him. But, you know, here's a guy who's got logistics and you know, all these pieces will start coming together. And I think that this is something that we need to take good care of and work hard to continue the trust factor, especially when this is going to be the only thing that we probably can trust when everything else falls apart. Rob, do you have any like final comments, you know, before we wrap this up?
No, the one thing I was going to add to what Gus was saying a moment ago is that keep in mind that we're doing this because we love it and we're having a lot of fun.
That's very obvious.
And we're, you know, we really enjoy doing this. And when I first got into this years ago, it was like it was the first time I found something in my life that I could do well at while doing good for you know, how I want to be known, who I want to be as a person. And that's exactly what we do day in and day out. And so with your support, with your fan support, it's all able to be a reality for us. And that just makes me feel great. So thanks for that.
Awesome. All right, guys, I think we're going to wrap it up. That was a pretty cool thing. You know, I wanted to get it all on tape, obviously, to keep everybody else updated, but I thought there was a lot of good stuff. And quite honestly, it's something I want to remember. It was a good trip, and, you know, we'll constantly redo that. I'll be back next week with more more ideas. I worked out a really cool thing about our next five stages. You know, we've gone, for the most part, everybody's out of the, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, and depression, and we're at acceptance. But the reality is that humanity is going to be going through those five stages. And while their five stages are going to be those exact stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, our five stages are going to run alongside of them, but at a totally different angle. And I want to kind of get people's minds wrapped around that to help us plan what we're going to do in our own personal lives. So, guys, thank you so much again for having us down. Thank you for taking time out to do this call, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
It's our pleasure,
Chris.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.